The Inside Story on Ivanka and Jared Kushner. That's all tonight on Gisner Talk with Jim Campbell. Vicki Ward is a New York Times bestselling author, investigative reporter, and magazine columnist, author of the best-selling books, The Liar's Ball, The Extraordinary Saga of How One Building Broke the World's Toughest Tycoons, for which we did an interview, The Devil's Casino, Friendship, Betrayal, and the High-Stakes Games Played Inside Lehman, for which we did an interview. She's editor-at-large at HuffPost, as well as Town & Country magazine. She was a contributing editor for years, I know, at Vanity Fair. And her new book is just out, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump Kushner. Hi, Vicki. How are you? Thanks for coming back for the third time.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
I'm going to ask you first. It's going to make you rank this right off the bat early. Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption. What in your mind is the biggest example of each of those, greed, ambition, corruption?
So with greed, I mean, I think that, the book really clearly shows how, as soon as Jared and Ivanka get into the truth transition, you see them exploiting it for their own personal gain. Within a week, I mean, you have Jared Kushner, the first weekend of the transition, secretly meeting with his father and big Chinese insurance company, and not telling any of his transition colleagues about this, to see if they can bail out their troubled building, 666 Fifth Avenue, which no American lender will touch with a 50-foot pole. And the problem with that was that, obviously, at the same time, Jared Kushner had put himself in charge of foreign outreach for the transition and was also meeting with the Chinese government. So right there, there's a conflict. But so that's the greed. And for Ivanka, the very, really early on in the transition, she and her family gave an interview to 60 Minutes, after which viewers were told they could buy a bangle from the Ivanka Trump line for $10,000. And although someone from the line apologized, as one of the transition senior transition officials said to me afterwards, well, you can't unsee it. So I think there you have the greed. The ambition is there in the sheer fact that these two pushed to join the government. I mean, this wasn't so much a case of Donald Trump saying, please, please come and be with me in the White House. This was them, and a lot of people around the president thought they had no business, they were not qualified, and they didn't like the idea of writing a legal opinion that broke with the nepotism laws, to have them there. And the corruption. So, I think one of the clearest examples of the corruption is how really, Jared closes the White House visitors' logs in order to conduct his own business networking. So the American people really can't see who he's meeting with in the White House. And a year later, when John Kelly reopened it, and there was a list of people that had either given loans to the Kushner Company's businesses, or in one case, there was a CEO who met with Jared, and this man, Lloyd Blankfein, then running Goldman Sachs, met with him at a time when Goldman Sachs was an investor in a company that Jared was still not only invested in, but had not disclosed his the investment. I mean, the optics of that are really, really poor. And I think with Ivanka, again, people around her were very concerned the fact she didn't give up her fashion line and then put herself on calls and in meetings with foreign leaders, and those foreign leaders were in a position to give that fashion line much needed trademarks. Again, the optics of that were really, really bad.
All right, let me ask you something. I meant to do this later in the show, but I happened to be reading a legal filing last night, and it just blew me away. Felix Sater is a guy who obviously is in your book, and this legal filing happens to be a bank in Kazakhstan that the owner looted billions of. And they looked for somebody to launder that, and Felix was laundered something like $400 million. This has nothing to do with the Trumps. But the interesting thing is some of the money went into three condos in Soho, Trump Soho. But the reason I really ask is Ivanka, this guy's been kind of a mentor to Ivanka, right? He had an office on the 26th floor, I think, of Trump Tower. How do they associate with a guy like this?
Well, I mean, I think Donald Trump had absolutely no problem associating with Felix Sater. You know, Felix Sater is extremely well connected in parts of the world that the Trumps are not, or were not, well connected. So, and he is aggressive, and he's bright. And, you know, for a long time, Felix's past, you know, the guy, you know, how he was, you know, had originally gone to jail, was kept under wraps. And I'm not sure that they would have known that he was actually secretly, you have to remember, he was secretly working for the FBI yeah. and a great many other intelligence agencies for a long time. I'm not sure that Donald Trump would have known that. But, you know, Donald Trump hired a lot of people who had records. You know, that didn't really bother him. What bothered him was if they could make him money. I think that what bothered would come, and I say this in the book, would come to bother Ivanka Trump was when his past was written about in the New York Times around 2008, who Felix Sater really was sort of disclosed for the first time. And what Ivanka objected to was not the fact that he was working with the Trump Organization, mm-hmm. but it was sort of the appearance of the association. So when he then came back into, he went disappeared to London for a couple of years. Actually, he had his own suggestion. When he then came back, Trump wanted him very, very close, just two doors down. Mm-hmm. And Ivanka didn't object to actually working with Felix. You know, her father said to her, he makes money. He's great for business. It was that she didn't think the optics were good. And I think, you know, it's really important because she is all about optics. Mm-hmm. Perception matters more than reality.
How did you get inside the both the Kushners and the Trumps? They're both so secretive.
Right. Well, so you have to, my last book, as you know, because you so kindly had me on to talk about it, was about the world of real estate, New York real estate.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has meant that I had known the president for a long, long time. And I have also, you know, I had superficially known Jared and Ivanka, but I was incredibly familiar with the cultures that sort of bred them. If you will. So the real estate piece of it was incredibly easy for me. And then when I got to Washington, what was so interesting reporting on this couple is that both the Democrats and the Republicans sort of wanted to talk because this, you know, that they're so polarizing. The Democrats have a huge problem with Jared and Ivanka's entitlement and their kind of poor ethics. Mm. And the Republicans feel that they're an obstacle to Trump's agenda, and that, you know, all the ethics issues that have been raised by them have been a real impediment to his presidency.
Do you think? Do you give them any honorable intents for coming in and doing public service on either side? I know that Ivanka may want to be president someday, but did they come with motives that were public service oriented?
No, I don't think they really did come in any public service. If I say that in the book, they went in for self-service. You know, it seems clear from the way that, you know, Ivanka immediately used government as a sort of platform to sell her jewelry. And that Jared, you know, went about immediately meeting with all these foreign leaders in secret and then didn't put any of this on his security clearance forms, you know, and, you know, carried on with this frenetic networking exercise until he was sort of caught. I mean, he took over foreign policy, he took over the Middle East, and conducted all these meetings in the dark, you know, cutting out national security protocols and cutting out the State Department, pushing for the first meeting that the United States had to be with, you know, not a country of shared democratic values, but for Saudi Arabia. And no one really knew what his underlying motives would be. So until years later, it was discovered that Charles Kushner, you know, had asked for $1 billion from the Saudis' rivals, the Qataris, and been turned down. So, you know, the Americans, we show up at this summit that's meant to be all about cooperation in the Gulf. 10 days later, the Saudis make a mockery of all of that. They announce that they're blockading Qatar, which is much richer than Saudi Arabia. And most people think that they just wanted to overthrow the rulers of Qatar and gain their resources. But the problem is Qatar has an American airbase on it. That's our security at risk. And Rex Tillerson and James Mattis, who were then in Australia when they heard about this, were completely horrified because they saw how dangerous it was. And they knew that the only person who would have given the green light for the Saudis to do this from the White House was Jared Kushner, because he controlled the relationship. So they found it deeply, deeply troubling.
This is the Best of Business Talk. Once again, we want to thank our stations, our affiliates, and as we say, 60 minutes of radio from leading figures of the world of business, along with the business of politics and sports today. Vicki Ward is a New York Times bestselling author, investigative reporter, and magazine columnist. And her new book is just out, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump Kushner. Let's talk about Charles Kushner, because that story is unbelievable. He hires a hooker to entrap his brother-in-law.
Right.
Tell us the story a little bit about
So Charles Kushner is, I think, a very, very complicated character, but is really the driving force behind absolutely everything that Jared does. I think it's really important to remember that. As you know, so that's why I give him sort of so much airtime in a way, because I think that unless you understand Charles Kushner's huge ambition for his son, mm-hmm. and the ambition that he once had for himself, and his sort of belief that rules are for other people, which is why he ended up doing this, you know, committing this terrible crime and others, that you can't understand Jared's mentality as Jared goes into government. So Charles Kushner, there he is, the son of Holocaust survivors, who, for very different reasons, think that rules are dangerous, right? Because if they had done what they were told during the war, they would be dead. So that is a sort of understandable mentality. But he grows up in New Jersey, the youngest child, desperate to assume, you know, become his father's favorite. And assume sort of leadership of his generation of the Kushner family. He's very, very successful with his real estate business, but he wants more. He has these ambitions for the Kushners to become the Jewish Kennedys. So he starts taking money that belonged to his siblings without telling them to pay for all these politicians that he would invite to speak in New Jersey. He would host them. Bibi Netanyahu, who was one, he came four times, and each time he cost $100,000 a go. And, you know, eventually his siblings notice and start to sue him. And then the civil dispute spills over, attracts the attention of the feds, then being led by Chris Christie, who is then the U.S. attorney for New Jersey. And the feds start to uncover all sorts of secrets about Charles Kushner, who was then, you have to remember, the absolute pinnacle of the Orthodox Jewish community, and who really didn't want a very sort of colorful personal life being aired in public. And so I think it's as he knows that Christie's team has got all this sort of dirt on him that they would claim they would use as leverage, he snaps. And he hires a prostitute to set up his own brother and he sets up the sting with his own brother-in-law, sure. And he films it and sends a video of the encounter to his sister. All of this is promptly counted as, you know, he's then charged with witness tampering, because his sister was a witness in the feds case against him, and. You know, that kind of does it for him. You know, he's then he knows that after that, he can never stand in front of a jury and tell them what a good person he is. So he has to plead guilty. But I think what's important is that in his mind and in Jared's mind and in the other Kushner children's mind, they didn't view Charles Kushner as going to jail because he broke the law. They viewed this whole thing as a family squabble that had wrongly spilled over into the public domain and should have never been any of the concern of the Fed. And so you have to understand that and understand the tremendous hostility and disdain with which they held Chris Christie, the leader of the Fed, which is why so many years later, you know, when Jared was going into the transition and then into the government, the one of the first things he does is to fire Chris Christie and to throw out all the transition papers.
And you believe that was directly related to the hatred?
Oh, no, it certainly was. I mean, all the people around Jared mm-hmm. at the time understood. I mean, he'd played a game, if you will. Trump had kind of foisted Chris Christie on him during the campaign, and there had been very little Chris Christie that Jared could have done to have stopped it. And Trump wasn't really paying that much attention to the transition while he was on the campaign, partly because he was superstitious. Yeah. But the moment then the transition became a real thing, I think everyone around Jared absolutely saw. I mean, it wasn't their idea to fire Chris Christie. It was all Jared. He didn't want to be seen as the person firing Christie, but it absolutely was, and ripping up all the work that he'd done, which actually threw the transition into chaos, and that it really didn't need.
Let me ask this, go back to the Middle East for a second. After MBS had Khashoggi essentially, you know, chopped up and killed, did Jared protect him? I mean, how we've been pretty light on him from the administration, at least.
Well, I think Jared has extraordinarily protected the Saudi Crown Prince. He's refused to condemn what happened. He sort of said it's a rough area or something. That was his quote.
Yeah, I know.
And you know, the next thing we know, he's gone back to have meetings with the Saudi Crown Prince. And yet again, I mean, Congress is now demanded to know what went on, because he did a trip where not even, you know, embassy officials had any idea who he was meeting with. They didn't, if you look at the letter that Congress has written, they didn't even know where he was staying. And this is extraordinary. We have these protocols in place that, you know, even when James Baker was sort of a great diplomat, used to have private conversations, he always then made a note to the file so that the State Department and the National Security Council knew what was going on. Because this really is our national security at risk.
In 30 seconds, how could Christie have missed that they were going to get revenge on him?
Well, I think he didn't miss that they were going to get revenge out of it. As I say in the book, his wife kept saying to him, the kid's going to get you. The kid is going to get you. Don't go anywhere near this. So when he was fired, you know, as he would said to Steve Bannon, you know, my wife was right. She kept saying, this is exactly what's going to happen, and Jared is going to get you.
And he got him. You're listening to Forensic Talk with Jim Campbell. We'll go to the Kushners in Washington next. From Philly to Fresno, Brooklyn to Boston, Data Cable Superstars has the best prices on installation of Cat 5 and Cat 6 wiring for cameras, computers, phone, and data. Specializing in off-peak installs as to not interrupt your workflow. If this is an I need it done yesterday situation, then it's time to call Data Cable Superstars at 203-942-1427 or go to datacablesuperstars.com. That's datacablesuperstars, all one word, .com. Data Cable Superstars, where estimates and big ideas are always free. We're back with Vicki Ward, the author of Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Let's talk about the presidency for a second. The story was always that, you know, they're winking at some of Trump's, you know, right-wing stuff, that they're moderate and, they, you know, the Democrat, they're, you know, hitting the, you know, he's sane and that kind of stuff. Do you buy that, that they're sort of a moderating force on Trump?
Not at all, because, you know, and I show in the book how, you know, again and again, despite Ivanka's sort of great line that she's put out there, this is just public relations, you know, she says, I speak to my father candidly in private, but she doesn't, you know, as we see with the Paris Climate Accord, mm-hmm. you know, she had very much sort of stuck her neck out as somebody who thought that we shouldn't be pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. But when Gary Cohn said to her, well, can you just go and talk to your father in private? She said, no, I just can't do that. So, you know, I, and again, when it came to the travel ban, the Muslim travel ban, Gary Cohn, again, you know, he's the sort of big liberal on the ticket, you know, on in the administration there. He is senior economic advisor. They're all gathering for Shabbat at Jared and Ivanka's house. And he said, have you heard about this? It's terrible. We've got to do what we can to stop it. And Jared sort of shrugged and said, no, you know, this is what the president campaigned on. We sort of have to leave it alone. The problem was that Jared and Ivanka then got all dressed up the next night in their black tie to go to a dinner. And they stuck a photo or Ivanka posted this on Instagram. And meanwhile, you had these terrible scenes in airports around the country as people were stranded because of this travel ban. So that her post on Instagram went viral in the most terrible way. That's when Ivanka goes to her father. And because she was portrayed as sort of a Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. And so this is all about self-preservation. It's really got nothing to do with them have any sense of sort of moderating her father.
The chaos in the White House, it's been there, you know, since day one. How much is that related to the fact that the Kushners don't really report up through the chief of staff? And so the chief of staff has never really had the power there to bring order.
Well, a huge amount. I mean, you know, the job of the chief of staff is to control whether or not he or she thinks that what you have to say to the president is worth his time, because their job is to control the calendar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, certainly for Reince Priebus, floaters, as, you know, Jared and Ivanka were called, were an absolute nightmare, because they thought that they should just have the right to stroll in and out of the Oval Office at any moment. You know, that made Reince Priebus's job just completely impossible. I think that John Kelly, you know, with his general background and mentality, was better able to control them, and he was told to control them by the president, absolutely told to control them. And I think that it worked, which is precisely why they did come to Trump and quit
and got him fired. Yeah.
Well, and Trump is the one who couldn't pull the trigger, interestingly, on his daughter. And ultimately, yeah, it wasn't them who left. It was John Kelly.
Yeah.
100%.
Let me ask this. You say this in the book. Trump, I mean, he seems to have very few people he can trust, and he trusts these two guys, but he wanted them to leave and go back to New York?
Well, it comes in waves, as I say in the book. Because so he'll go, when they do something that really irks him, he doesn't like it. When anyone else casts his presidency in a negative light,
yeah.
It sort of doesn't matter if he tweets something and the press goes nuts. That's on him. But he does mind if somebody else makes him look bad. And so he didn't like it when they attracted a lot of negative attention for their misuse of personal emails. Because that was something he'd gone so vociferously after Hillary Clinton with. He was really upset about that. He was really upset about all the scrutiny that Jared's father and Jared incurred over the Kushner company's finances, because he thought that just made it easier for people to look into his own finances.
Right.
Um, So there have been moments when he just thought it would be better if they went back to New York. He has absolutely thought that. But then he forgets all about it. So, you know, I mean, it's a complicated relationship.
It is, because let's look at the other side of this. Somehow this guy, who really hasn't done anything, is secretary of everything. This guy, he's running the Middle East. He's doing the embassy was moved, Golan, Gaza, NAFTA, innovation, prison reform. How does he get that? How does he even run all that?
Well, he pushed, you know, Rex Tillerson. His mistake was that he thought just because he had the job title Secretary of State, that meant he actually was Secretary of State. He hadn't accounted for Jared Kushner, who told him flatly that he was taking charge of the Middle East. And, you know, Rex Tillerson watched him do, you know, foreign policy Jared's way, which was sort of rather typical. You know, it wouldn't be unusual if he was working for his family firm in New York, but it's not the way government does things for a reason. You know, he just started using WhatsApp to communicate with all these leaders in the Middle East so that nobody else had a record of what he was talking about, you know, or sometimes even where he was going. So I think that, you know, that was Jared pushing very much for that. And I think what's so frightening about all of that is that not only did he not achieve peace in the Middle East, in fact, he nearly put us into a war there with this blockade of Qatar, is that you then see foreign policy being run sort of on parallel tracks with Kushner companies. Financing,
yeah.
So, you know, 9 months, you know, so 9 months after the blockade, the, you know, MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, has arrived in Washington and has told the president that he doesn't have $4 billion to just hand over to help with rebuilding Syria. So the Qataris see an opportunity and come over to the United States. And within a two-week window, the Americans just say that they're withdrawing their support from the blockade. And Kushner Companies, this wretched building, 666 Fifth Avenue, this money pit, where the clock has been ticking, and they've desperately needed $1.4 billion by February 2019 when the loan is due. Suddenly, that gets bailed out in a very, very strange deal that people, no one in the industry thinks makes any sense at all, where a Canadian firm whose largest outside investor is the Qatari government leases the building for 99 years, and the entirety of the lease is paid up front. And
that is incredible. That blew me away.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
you think something was going on there?
Yeah, I mean, people in real estate just think it stinks. I mean, and you clearly structure a deal like that if you want to accommodate the Kushner's tax. You know, when a building like that is bought or sold, there are enormous tax, recapture tax requirements, all of which would have been basically obviated the way it was done. So Congress rightly is talking about looking into this. And I think that the financing of that building will be a major issue for the 2020 election.
What is the status now? So is the mortgage sort of paid off after that? Do they own much of it anymore?
Well, so technically the Kushners still own it, but the leasehold now belongs to Brookfield for 99 years. So the Kushners are out of it. They don't have, so financially they are out.
Did Jared and Ivanka get Bannon fired?
The body count around them by now is
body count.
Is absolutely enormous. But I think the stories as to whether Bannon was fired or Bannon left. I mean, he clearly wasn't having much traction. Yeah. I don't think by the time he left in the White House. And if you look at Trump's policies, I mean, Trump has stuck to sort of his campaign promises, you know, for a long time now. I mean, well after Bannon left. So I think, you know, Bannon sort of got in there, but I'm not sure he was that effective, actually. when he was inside the White House.
In the last minute of this segment, do you uncover how Melania and Ivanka get along? I know you say in the book that she wanted, Ivanka wanted an office in the East Wing, and that was vetoed.
Yes. Drawn up plans for a Trump family office in the East Wing. And that when Melania Trump heard about this, she just absolutely put her foot down. And you haven't heard Pete from Ivanka since. And I think that's quite telling. Actually, I will say this, that in all my reporting, no one had anything negative to say about Melania Trump, which I think is quite telling.
Back with our final segment. Stay with us. We're back. Investigative journalist Vicki Ward on her book on the Kushners. Let me ask you this quickly. Have Ivanka and Jared put their money into a blind trust?
So yes, they put their money into trusts run by Jared's brother, Josh, and his mother, which is just ludicrous. I mean, you know, when you go into government and you go into public service, the rules say that you're supposed to give up everything, all assets, all stocks and shares, so that you're not conflicted. Putting it in, you know, for these two people who both work for family businesses, handing your assets over to your family, who are clearly then going to give it right back to you right after, it doesn't cut it. And, you know, I think that one of the very important reasons to remember that, you know, why the intelligence and security agencies did not think this couple should be should have security clearances is to do with their financial situation. If you have debt, or you're perceived to have financial vulnerabilities and conflicts, which is what happens if you don't sell up, that makes you a target, which is a reason you shouldn't have a security clearance.
Interesting. So that's the reason, eh?
Well, it's one of them. I mean, the whistleblower, when she came out and talked about the security clearance issues, actually pointed to three different things. It was, you know, it was the money, but it was also personal conduct, right? And then it was also a naivety, you know, inexperience. So it's the combination of having conflicts of interest, being inexperienced and naive, and then sort of a track record of recklessness.
What, bad ethics?
Look at all the things that we've already talked about in this interview, Jim. Look at, you know, the very fact that Jared, you know, had all these secret meetings during the transition, didn't tell his transition colleagues he was meeting with, didn't take anyone with him, then didn't think to fill any of to put any of his meetings with foreign officials on his security clearance forms. You know, Gary Cohn, who has had experience in the corporate world, you know, hasn't just worked for his father like Jared has, said to him, you know, Jared, everything you do is discoverable. You have to take somebody with you. But Jared doesn't have the experience or the will. You know, he's arrogant to do that. So that's what I mean by, you know, naivety and poor conduct.
Now, this interested me, too, because you quote Louise Sunshine, who I guess was an executive for Trump Organization, that, you know, things like Trump University, the franchising, the licensing, Trump Network was kind of a pyramid, that you say actually the kids deserve a lot of the blame for not doing the due diligence with those.
Yeah, so what happened was that, you know, the Trump business went from being a real estate business into just a branding licensing business. And the problem was the kids, you can see from various depositions they've given over the years, they're all running around scrambling to get their father's approval and to present him with deals. It works in a ridiculously sort of ad hoc way that they will basically just say, hey, I've got, you know, Abu Dhabi. We'll do a golf course with us, and he'll just say yes or no. I mean, that is how the decision making is done at the Trump Organization. And what is very clear is that there is very little due diligence done as to the financial background, or indeed the any sort of moral backgrounds of these partners, which is why they found themselves in one instance in bed with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and, you know, real crooks. And also why a lot of these partnerships have actually failed, because they jumped into bed with all sorts of money launderers. Yeah, I mean, again, it's just total inexperience.
And it's all that seems to drive it is getting money up front, too. That's the
That's exactly it.
All of these things should have been built for the long term, but they don't survive. Let me ask you this now, as we get down to the end. Do you have a prediction, or what do you see come, you know, what's going to happen to them in the White House, and where do you see them going?
Right, so the book ends at kind of a crossroads with two options. You know, either this extraordinarily, relentless, and, you know, surprisingly successful march for power, relentless power, mm-hmm. continues, and Ivanka's sort of ambition to become president, you know, possibly becomes fulfilled, or they get held to account because the House has subpoena power, and we know that Mueller touched on a lot of things,
yes.
particularly pertaining to the Middle East, that would have had absolutely no business showing up in his report on, you know, Russia, and that, you know, various other branches of government, such as the Southern District of New York and right. others, are now pursuing that, and I think that will be very, very interesting to follow, and I hope that becomes a really important issue for the 2020 election.
Do you think that, I mean, is everything in Trump's taxes that he doesn't?
Well, it's the answer to everything. I mean, I think that there are a lot of answers in Trump's taxes, which is obviously why he doesn't want us to see them.
Money laundering, maybe?
Well, I suspect there's an awful lot. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because like everyone else, I haven't actually seen them. You know, I would think there are a lot of things in there that he doesn't want us to know about for a reason. But I also, you know, I mean, I wrote a book about Jared Kushner. I think that,
right.
I don't suspect there's answers to Jared Kushner's financial dealings in there. I think that, you know, they'll have to have separate investigations for that. And I, you know, you'll notice that in the Judiciary Committee's letters that it sent out recently, to 81 people, there were a huge number of questions on there about the Kushner Company's businesses and a huge number of questions about Ivanka's businesses.
And there's a lot of potential Kushner fraud, right, where they move money around and stuff. Is that fair game to go after or not really?
No, I mean, I think what's important to go after is whether or not Jared broke the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
which says very clearly that you cannot go into government and basically accept gifts or bribes from foreign powers or indeed from anybody. And so the fact that he is sitting in the White House, and we know that Kushner Company's got loans from Apollo and Citigroup, you know, I think that's the axis to look at, the fact that he closed the White House visitors logs, and then his family business is then getting all these loans from companies who have representatives that have been meeting with him in the White House. That is a real problem. The financing of 666 Fifth Avenue is a real problem.
Well, it's the first book that's gotten behind the Ivanka and Jared Javanka couple. A lot in it. Thanks to Vicki Ward. The book is Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared and Ivanka Trump. It's been a nerve talk with Jim Campbell. See everybody next Monday night for another edition of Nerve Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks, Vicki.